Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Too Scared to Sleep.
Hey guys, welcome back. We dealt with what was supposed to be a hard freeze.
Ah, yeah.
And we couldn't meet, and then we needed to take some time off for your mental health, which is fine. It's quite understandable. But it was crazy, you know? But we're back. We're bringing the heat. Bringing that thunder.
Back in action, baby.
That's right. We narrowly avoided Snowvid 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
And survived.
Got all of, like, a day of freezing weather.
Yeah, but that's it. Check this out. I am now an official member.
Hell yeah.
Of the Satanic Temple.
Hell yes. I'm so excited for you. I love it.
Satan.
It's really Hail cool. Satan.
Also, I really like that your plaque is the same design that I got for my card.
Oh, very nice. And I didn't even know that.
I know. I got the much busier design for my plaque. The one that has, like, the illustration looks almost like a Bosch painting. It's pretty cool.
I know the one.
Yeah.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Too Scared to Sleep, guys.
Hail and well met.
Hail and well... Oh, my God. Of course. He's got to pull in some D&D bullshit.
He hates when I say that.
I really do.
But I am riding that D&D train. I have been playing D&D with a coworker, and it's been going very well. This is my first time DMing, like, a big campaign rather than, like, a little bullshit one-off or, like, one-shot.
Don't ask him about it. He starts talking about it in length, and it gets really boring.
Yeah, that's true. That's how most people feel about most of the things that I say.
That's true.
So.
What can you do? I watched all of Sweet Tooth.
No, I'm just kidding.
Which was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Haven't watched that yet.
The naivete and the idiocy of the main child character always gets me, and I just end up yelling at the television, like, how can you be so naive about this world that you're living in? People are literally hunting you, and you're still walking around with this childlike wonder. It's just really upsetting to me to have to watch that.
I hate children being happy.
Yeah, yeah, and I end up, you know, yelling at the television the way that I watch TV. I mean, I watch like that. I mean, if it's anything on television, I watch that way.
This is true. I've seen him do it many times.
Mm-hmm.
I recently watched Brand New Cherry Flavor. Have you watched that?
I haven't watched it yet.
That is some wild shit. That is some fucked up nonsense right there. It was good, but it was weird. There was one episode in particular where it gets into, like, because it's all supernatural, trippy, weird, dark, grimy shit. But there's one episode that deals with, like, a sex magic thing, and, like, the way that they approached it, like, sex magic, right, could have been cool. Love me some sex magic, but not, like, not the way that they did it there. Mild spoiler alert, but it doesn't really mean anything. She gets, like, a vagina in her ribs, right? So, like, the main girl is barfing up cats, like, as a payment to this witch, and she's like, I'm tired of throwing them up, like, it fucking hurts. So the witch gives her a vagina in her ribs that a cat comes out of, and then the dude that she's hooking up with, she has him, like, fist her ribs. Like, it shows full fist entering the ribs. And I'm so sorry to everybody that had to see that. I forgot that we were doing video, so that's on camera. But other than that one scene, I was like, this show's pretty fucking cool. But it got real uncomfy there for a minute.
Man, this took a left turn.
Took a real left turn.
So quick.
Yeah, forgot I was going there.
I had no idea. I'm sorry, guys. I had no idea he was going to do this.
We were talking about
Sweet Tooth on Netflix.
Yeah.
And somehow...
Well, I just wanted to share. That's the only, like, show that I've been watching other than Peacemaker. And Peacemaker's good. Peacemaker doesn't get that weird.
Speaking of vaginas and fists.
Yeah.
I've been watching 90 Day Fiancé.
Nice.
Before the 90 days with my girlfriend, because that's her trashy, that's her her guilty pleasure when it comes to trashy reality TV. And it's just so, I mean, it's like the bullshit that's going on in that show far surpasses, I mean, by exponential terms, the kind of drama that we ever had in our dating disaster stories. So crazy, the people that are on that show.
Have you seen any of the clips of the new, I think it's a TLC show, Adults Adopting Adults?
Oh my God, that sounds crazy.
It's fucking disgusting. There is one particular dude that's been, like, giving TLC a lot of heat for it. Because the whole thing is, like, adult adoption. So these old couples will adopt adults and just make them their kids, right? They get the chance to, like, meet up with them and whatever. It's a weird premise anyway, but this one dude who is like already open about like having cheated on his wife, I think more than once. He's talking about this girl that they just adopted and how he's scared that he might develop feelings for this girl who is legally his daughter. And he doesn't just stop there. Like, it keeps going.
I feel like throwing up at this point. Thanks.
Yeah, no, it's super gross. So, like, you know, maybe write to TLC. I don't know if you can do that. Or just, you know, whatever. But it's, yeah, it's really gross. And you want to talk about, like, trashy. This dude is talking about,
Go ahead. Keep going.
Please. Okay, so his wife is like, oh, yeah, no, definitely. You're going to hear more. So his wife is like, well, we have to hold these signs up to, like, let her know that we're here. So, like, what should the signs say? And the husband said something along the lines of, like, welcome to wherever, where's my blowy? And it's like, dude, you did not just fucking say that on TV.
Again, I'm sorry. I had no idea he was going to go here with all of this.
This is literally all I have to update on. I don't have anything pleasant, and I'm trying to keep it away from, like, my life falling apart. Look, so we're going to other people's lives falling apart.
Do what I do. If you start watching something and you realize it's trash like this, just stop watching it. Go to our Voodoo and watch either Dune or Blade Runner 2049.
Dune got nominated for Best Picture, and I'm really excited. Good for them.
Absolutely. Or watch Tenet. Those are three safe movies. I should watch Tenet again. Masterpieces. Well written, well acted, amazing cinematography, amazing editing, amazing sound editing.
See, I get it. It's on TikTok. It all shows up on here. And then I'm like, oh, well, I mean, I guess it's on my screen. I'll look at it. And then I look at it and I get upset. But, you know.
Watch something good.
I should watch something good. That's valid.
Whatever. The Super Bowl is this weekend. Are you going to watch? The Hollyhead Harpies are playing the Chudley Cannons. And so we'll see who's going to win.
Are those real teams?
You don't know if they are they?
I don't know if they are.
I had that already planned because, no, those aren't real football teams, you dummy. Those are Quidditch teams from Harry Potter.
Fuck.
But you would not know. Like, if I hadn't told you, you would honestly think,
I would think
that the Hollyhead Harpies and the Chudley Cannons are NFL sports teams. And you would not know the difference.
Yeah. I don't see a problem with that, yeah. No, the only thing I care about with the Super Bowl is that I get to watch a couple cool commercials.
Oh, but the halftime show is going to be fucking amazing.
Isn't it like Eminem?
It's Eminem, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, Mary J. Blige, Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, I would watch that halftime show.
The Left Shark, the Noid from Domino's Pizza.
From Domino's Pizza. He's been making a comeback here.
They're going to release that new song, Project Pikachu. It's going to be awesome. just bringing back all sorts of callbacks.
It's just us. It's me and Jake. We're doing the Super Bowl halftime show. Big reveal, everybody.
Listen, Insomniacs, I'm going to just take it real serious right now and let you know, as a public service announcement, whatever you do, do not order the Domino's Pizza Batman.
No, it's Little Caesars.
Commemorative. Oh, yeah, the Little Caesars commemorative pizza, because it is disgusting.
It makes you feel really bad about yourself while you eat it.
Pizza already feels bad, I mean, once you eat it, but at the same, this takes it up
a notch. Have you ever had a bad mushroom trip where you realize that all life is fleeting? And, like, you're going to die eventually?
Yeah, it's disgusting. It's so gross.
It makes me feel like
Dylan ate one, and he told me that it was horrible, and it induced a level of depression that he was, so far, had been avoiding. And I said, well, okay, well, I'm going to try it myself.
Yeah, exactly.
And it did the same for me. It's disgusting. I never want to eat it again.
Which sucks, because I love Little Caesars, and you know I love me some Batman.
Oh, but and I love Little Caesars, and I also love Batman.
Put them together, and it was just not... It wasn't it, guys.
No. So against God's plan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Disgusting. And it's, like, anatomically correct for a bat, so you have to eat the pazoosie.
The Batman pazoosie.
It's so gross. I'm excited for that movie, though. It's going to be good.
Yeah. Do you see their... Well, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it, because I've been sending you the...
I've been watching all of it.
...posts about
all
it.
I know all of it.
They're doing special IMAX screenings.
They are doing
at special. 7 o'clock on a fucking Tuesday, so I can't go because I'm working.
Tuesday. It's going to be awesome. What else is going on with you?
A lot of bummer shit. I don't know if I... Did I talk about the concert? Have we recorded since I went to the concert?
Yes.
Okay. That's the only good thing that's happened.
Have you reached out to your soulmate yet?
No, actually, I haven't. Oh, I should do that real quick. I'm gonna.
It's true love.
You guys are gonna see it live. We're doing it now.
Oh my god, he's gonna do it right now.
I'm probably not gonna reach out to him, but I'll at least follow them on Instagram.
That's so awkward. We should have more to talk about. We really honestly don't have that much to talk about. You were here for like, you've been here for at least 45 minutes.
Yeah,
all he didn't have any food, so then I made him food, and then he ate it as slow as he fucking could have.
He let me eat the other half of his Batman Little Caesars pizza that he ordered.
Because I don't need that in my house.
Yeah, that's fair. And I didn't need it in me, but, it, you know, but not one to complain.
Oh, and so. Then, I don't know if you guys can see, but his ears. Ugh. Please stop. I'm going to throw up watching
you. I've talked about my ears.
Your fucking ears. I can't believe you did that to yourself.
Multiple times. These are silicone and they glow in the dark.
Oh, I don't want you to do that.
I get my whole thumb comfortably in there.
Again, that heat that you feel in your face right before you throw up, I feel it right now. It's so gross.
That's pretty funny.
I don't like when you do that. It's just so disgusting to watch you do that. Honestly. Oh, please stop. Please stop. There's this one guy on 90 Day Fiancé. He's so stupid. He's so fucking stupid.
I feel like I'm about to get compared to this person.
No. His arc for his life is very similar to the arc of my life. He grew up in a very religious household and went to a Bible college and met the love of his life at the Bible college. And they got married and he became an ordained minister and they had a bunch of kids. And then at some point, here's the part that got to me. He was like, you know, just the emotional and something like the emotional abuse just got to a certain point that I just couldn't be with her anymore. And I'm like, you sound really stupid right now. Like, just say it. You got married because you felt that social stigma within the cult that you were living in where you couldn't have sex until you got married. So you got married. And so then he divorced his wife. And then I'm not sure whether he's a preacher anymore, but then he started like losing weight and he got to around the age of 40. He got divorced. He lost a lot of weight.
Yeah.
He got himself a motorcycle.
Yep. God.
And, you know, I'm watching this. I'm like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. He's doing all the things that I did. But then he starts getting on this online dating. I don't know how this guy can't find a normal woman around, right? Probably because he's super Christian and that's a big turnoff, right? So then he starts talking to some woman in Africa who he feels such a strong spiritual and emotional connection with, and she's the love of my life, and he sends her this money, and it turns out he's getting fucking catfished. Of course he is. Because he's so stupid and naive.
Oh my God.
So that happens. I'm sure he told everybody in his family and everybody, all of his friends in his social circle all about it. So of course everybody's probably laughing behind his back, but at the same time, you know, thinking how stupid he is. And then he recovers from that and he tries to find love again. And then he finds love with this girl whose name is Mahogany, who lives in Peru. And he sends her money.
Stop sending people money.
He's been talking to her for like a year. Never video chats with her. I mean, it's like a red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag.
Yeah.
So now he's on this show and he's like, I've met the love of my life. And his friends are like looking at him like, you're so stupid. It's like, her name's Mahogany. She lives in Peru. And they're like, have you ever video chatted with her? And he's like, and he says, no, I've never video chatted with her because she's really shy. No, it's a fucking dude, man.
That is a fat man. That is a fat
man.
It's
a guy.
That he sent money to.
So then he's on this show and all of this is in public, you know, it's public record now. And he's messaging her and he plans on going down to see her. And right as he's about to get on the plane, she messages. She's like, I don't think it's a good idea for you to come down here. My dad doesn't think that your intentions are pure and I don't think you should come. And he still goes and gets on the plane and flies all the way down to fucking Peru. And he's like, I'm just going to go to the meeting spot where she said that she would meet me by the taxi cabs. And he sets out there for like an hour, maybe 2 hours waiting for this girl who never shows up because she doesn't fucking exist. And then he spends like the night in the hotel and he's crying and he's so upset and he tries to set up a meeting and she won't message him back. It's like, come on, how stupid and gullible are you? And there's another guy on there who's in love with this woman in South America as well.
What is up with South America?
Dude, I don't know what's going on with South America.
He's been talking to her. When you were getting catfished, wasn't it also a lady in South America?
One of them said that she was from Puerto Rico, but she was living in Florida. And again, At no point did I think this person is the person that...
Yeah, no, that was purely for experiment and like
purely for entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
We just kept it going. And it didn't even last for like a week because it was like... Because it was so quick. They're so quick to get to this point where they're like, I'm just really, really down right now because I need to buy groceries and it's going to be another week before I get paid. And it's like, obviously, you know what's going to happen next, you know? This is the point where if you're stupid and gullible, you're going to offer to send them money or they're going to ask you for money. And it's like, oh, the jig is up. Obviously, this is just a stupid catfish.
What you should do is if they ask for money, just say, OK, cool. Like, what's your Venmo, Cash App, PayPal, whatever, and then request that amount of money from them, because sometimes they won't pay attention and they'll just hit accept because they see the dollar amount and then you get that money. So, and you don't have to feel bad because it's somebody who is trying to steal money from you.
Right.
And you in turn take it from them and you put them in their place.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
But I'm not that engaged in this, you know, in this act to be able to, it doesn't hold my attention that much. So yeah. This guy's been talking to this woman who's actually there, but he has been sending her money every month to help her with rent. He's bought her like a fridge and a stove and a couch and a dining room set. All this stuff. He's sending this woman this money.
If I get catfished and I've already sent all that shit, I'm taking the shit with me.
Oh, I would take the shit with me. The craziest part for me is that he's been talking to her and she's been talking to him for over a year now. And he's never bothered to learn any Spanish. And she's never bothered to learn any English. So he goes down there and he's got like this little translator machine, or he's using Google Translate to translate everything that he wants to say to her in Spanish and her back the same way.
If you were that in love, you wouldn't even like, you wouldn't just go take a Spanish one course. You can Duolingo.
You can take a Spanish. There's a Spotify. Every episode teaches you a little bit of Spanish and they're like, we'll get you there to conversational Spanish in like 30 days. Because in comparison, on a scale there, to learn Spanish is a lot easier than it is to learn English.
Well, yeah,
that's true. It's very easy. The verbs are conjugated in a certain way that makes a lot of sense. All of the consonants and vowels sound the same no matter what, you know, subject, verb, and all that other stuff. It makes a lot of, you know, it's a lot easier to learn it. English is a pain in the ass. English is not one language. It's actually three different languages sitting on top of each other. Wearing a trench coat, pretending to be one language.
Yeah.
So I can understand why someone would have a difficult time learning English, but the person on the other side should be able to learn Spanish really easily.
I would like to learn Spanish.
It's so painful to watch this guy go down there, and he's like a super nerd. He's like 5'3" and like super nerdy looking, and he has all of these Lego collections in his house. That's what he does.
I don't want to be that guy because I'm a fucking nerd myself, but...
There's levels, brother.
It's just all coming together.
Mm-hmm. I feel bad for him because it's obvious that she's just using him for his money and for the idea of having him having security. But is she really in love with him? Probably not. Is it going to work out? Probably not. No, I don't think so.
No.
Enough about that. I only watch it, again, for the entertainment purposes of it. But at the same time, I end up yelling at the television the entire time.
This is true.
When he's on, I'm listening, and I hear what he's saying to her, and I just translate to Spanish for him. And it makes me upset that he's gone this long and he hasn't learned any fucking Spanish, because it's one of the easiest languages to learn.
Yeah, it's... I didn't learn Spanish because I was in 4 years of Spanish where the teachers just said, here's the worksheet and here's the answers on the board.
Nice.
So I mean, it was a super easy class for the first one. That was my Spanish one with the coach who was a creep and didn't care about teaching Spanish.
God, of course.
And then like my Spanish 2, 3, and 4 were all just like projects. Yeah. So it was literally just like, hey, you know how to say this in Spanish? Yeah, cool. Can you tell me so I can, like, record the video? Yeah, cool. Done. That was it. So I would like to learn Spanish because of the practicality, and I would like to learn sign language because I love hand motions and talking shit in front of people without them knowing.
Not to mention it helps you to avoid social cues in spoken language because you're a little bit autistic.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's okay.
I mean, you know.
Listen, I love you for who you are. There's also that show that you should watch on Netflix called Love on the Spectrum.
I have had so many people recommend that I watch Love on the Spectrum. Yes. I'm going to lose my goddamn marbles.
Just watch it. Just watch it. I watched it. Every episode made me tearful. I'm like, oh, my boy Dylan.
Jake actually sent me a link to an autistic dating website.
I thought it would work.
And I did download it. I tried it out just to see what it was like. There was like four people that were within a 20-mile range, and they were all over the age of 35. And then within a 100-mile range, it was like maybe 10 more people also over the age of 35.
I'm sorry.
And it didn't work out. I appreciate that you tried to find me love. That is what's important.
I'm trying.
But it did not work on
that. I'm doing what I can. We just live in the wrong area.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're I recently got my first super like on Tinder. Mm. So I'm riding that high because that's the only positive right now.
Because when I think about quality dating websites, Tinder's the first one that comes to mind.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's something.
All right, Insomniacs. Obviously, we don't have that much to talk about. But listen, if you can recommend the podcast, it's being exclusively streamed on Spotify, where you can watch it or you can listen to it, and it's there. But we need more listeners, obviously.
But we're not exclusively on Spotify.
We're not exclusively on Spotify. We're not still on Anchor, are we?
Yeah, we're going through Anchor, and Anchor is owned by Spotify, but it posts to Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and all those other fucking shits.
Nice.
The only thing that we're not up to date on is YouTube, because that is a pain in the ass to upload and it takes forever.
But we don't need to do that because if you want to watch the video, just go to Spotify.
Yeah, but for those that don't want to use Spotify, you can go to YouTube eventually once I get these uploaded.
Sure, but we're not gonna hassle him about that.
Yeah.
All right. So Campbell timestamp. Let's put it at 18 minutes.
We are at 22 minutes.
22 minutes. Campbell timestamp, 22 minutes.
Campbell timestamp, 22 minutes.
Campbell timestamp, 22 minutes. Bring the heat. Bring the thunder. Bring the hail, Satan. All right. Okay. I've got an action-packed double episode here.
I'm so excited.
14 pages of notes. We've already talked about it. We usually, when we're putting together a topic, we try to get about 6 pages. That's going to give you about 30 minutes of talk. But this is going to be a multimedia event because it's 14 pages of exposition. And we also have some photos to put on here. This one comes from my girlfriend who was at the house during the freeze. And I was walking around and she says, Have you ever heard of the Colorado Cannibal?
Colorado Cannibal?
And I said,
that's a new one.
And I looked at her and I said, this is why I love you. This is why I'm with you, because this is the kind of person I want to spend the rest of my life with, who says something like, have you ever heard of the Colorado Cannibal?
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, my God. So we're going to talk about a guy named Alfred Greiner Packer, the Colorado Cannibal. Oh, my God. It's crazy. He was born in Pennsylvania on January 21st, 1842. Long time ago. And by the early 1850s, he had moved his family to LaGrange County, Indiana, where he worked as a cabinet maker. Alfred is said to have had a bitter relationship with his parents, as we always see.
That tracks.
And later moved in his late teens to the Minnesota area, where he worked as a shoemaker. He worked as a lot of things. He joined the Union Army during the Civil War. He enlisted in 1862 in Winona, Minnesota, and was assigned to an infantry regiment. He was eventually discharged because of epilepsy 8 months later. He moved south and enlisted in a cavalry regiment, but he was discharged there for the same reason. He suffered from seizures and is reported to have about a seizure every 1 or 2 days.
Damn.
And so obviously he just can't, you know, it wasn't sustainable. So he travels west, and over the next 9 years, he works in numerous odd jobs, ranging from hunter, wagon team master, ranch hand, field worker. But his seizures and overall attitude ensured that he never kept a job for long. He also worked for a couple of months as a guide, but those who knew him at this time later stated that being a guide was by no means his strong point, and he was prone to lose his way.
Oh, that's not what you want.
No. This plays heavily into the end of the story.
Oh, no.
God, I love saying that. He ended up working a lot of mining-related jobs, drifting from mine to mine, but never found prosperity through this industry. He worked for a short time in the Colorado area as a miner, but moved on to Utah, having no luck in Colorado. By all accounts, Packer was generally disliked and distrusted by most who knew him. He was recalled by several different people as having been known to steal. He was quarrelsome, and he was difficult to get along with, like you, Dylan.
Hey, I wouldn't describe me as quarrelsome.
I would peg you for a cannibal in, I mean, so quickly you would resort to cannibalism. You know you would.
I have been interested to consensually and legally.
Don't say that. Don't say that out loud.
At least no. Try no. Once.
Don't say that, Army Hammer. Don't say that out
no,
loud.
No, okay. I'm not, I don't have an urge to do it.
Stop. Oh my God. Go ahead. Keep saying it. Keep.
I'm just,
dig that hole for yourself.
Let me explain myself.
No. This should be on the list of things that we're never... Remember when we first started the podcast, we made a list of things that we were never allowed to make fun of or mention on the
Remember. I remember that we created the list and I instantly forgot everything we put on the list.
Okay, and so did I. But subconsciously, I still remember there are things that we should not joke about. Okay. And you being a cannibal is one of those things.
No. I'm never going to eat human meat. I don't have a desire to eat human meat. However, if somebody consensually gave me a little tiny morsel, was like, hey, man, you want to try? I feel like, okay, maybe I could try.
Okay, you just put it out there.
I'm just saying, this is not an urge that I have. It's not a thing that I want to do, but it's like somebody gave me alligator jerky one time, and I was like, this is probably going to be gross, but I'm going to fucking try it. Because who else around here can say they've eaten alligator?
Lots of people, actually. Alligator's not that uncommon.
Okay, but I mean, we're in fucking New Braunfels, Texas. Like, we're not near a body of water other than a river. Like, watch. I don't know, it's...
I'm gonna show you how easy it is to find fried alligator around here.
Okay, I'm sure you can find it. Whatever. I'm just saying, like...
Papados.
Weird exotic shit.
Papados.
As exotic as I've gotten.
Yeah, in San Antonio, you can get fried alligator. We're 30 minutes away.
In San Antonio, not New Braunfels.
We're 30 minutes away. That's nothing.
Well, I got it from Louisiana. I wanted to try it. Oh, I just wanted, you know.
Right, whatever. Doesn't
whatever. Matter. Fine.
Go ahead. You put it out there.
Put me on blast.
You put it out there. You would resort to cannibalism. As like on a dare, almost. Go ahead. You're the one who said it, not me. I'm going to try to get back to the story.
In now. A survival situation, I would not immediately jump to cannibalism. I'll have you know.
You'd be there so quick.
My social anxiety and my guilt complex would not allow me to resort to cannibalism right away. If other people started doing it, I could join in the train. If you started eating people, I'd be like, okay, well, Jake's doing it.
For the record...
Jake will immediately eat you.
No, I won't. All right, so let's continue on. Now that you've put that out there, you freaking weirdo.
Jesus. Don't open that door if you don't want me to walk through it.
All right, listen. A lot of folks have also described Alfred Packer as a pathological liar, or a nearly pathological liar. So almost everything that came out of his mouth, right? So here's where it starts to ramp up. In November of 1873, 20 men left the Bingham County mines near Salt Lake City for the gold fields of Breckenridge, Colorado. They had gotten news that there was a massive gold strike there. The men were largely strangers to each other and banded together to make their fortune. One of the guys named Bob McGrew rallied any willing men to follow him. George Tracy, who was also a member of the original party, claimed that the men encountered Packer some 25 miles from their starting point near Provo, Utah. Packer asked where they were headed, and when he heard that they were headed for the gold country of the San Juan Mountains, he said he would like to join him. Packer was without any money and also lacked adequate supplies. So the men were apprehensive to take him along. Why would you even take this guy along?
Why would you do such a thing?
Oh my gosh. He claimed that he was both a prospector and a guide. Again, the pathological liar. And that he knew the San Juan territory well. His claim gave him a position of worth among the simple prospectors who knew little or nothing of Colorado's geography. Unfortunately, neither did Packer, because he's full of shit. Members of this original party later said that he had vastly overstated his experience of being a seasoned guide familiar to the area, or had even possibly fabricated his qualifications together. Obviously.
You don't say.
He was also reported as being without a rifle at the time the expedition left, having only a Colt revolver with him. Oh my god.
What in tarnation?
He showed up in fucking Crocs, Cade. Minus 25 points on the John McClane score. Cade.
Yeah, Cade.
God damn it. Throughout the course of their journey, Packer was reported to as being he was reported as being greedy with rations. He was a bit of a beggar. He was lazy and he was obstinate. He was reported to have quarreled constantly with party member Frank Miller. At the time of his first trial, spoiler alert, Packer was characterized as a whining fraud by party member Preston Nutter.
My God.
His constant seizures also made his presence in the group strenuous. The party made less than adequate progress towards their destination. The winter was becoming a major obstacle for them. Why they waited until the winter, I have no idea. As the wagons and horses, because they were trying to get to the gold rush. The wagons and the horses and the assemblage were all being bogged down, along with the fact that the Mormon Trail where they were going was becoming heavily snowed over and largely indistinguishable. So the men were forced to rely solely on the compass. Packer's inexperience was also beginning to show itself, and the party ultimately became lost. Provisions quickly ran out, and the men were reduced to surviving for a considerable length of time on the horse feed. And we're nearing the port. We're nearing the point where the horses themselves were next on the menu. Ugh.
That's not great.
No, it's not. On January 21st of 1874, the party came upon the encampment of Chief Ouray, who was known as the White Man's Friend, near Montrose, Colorado, within the Umcumbri Valley. The men were desperate, but still approached the camp with great trepidation because they looked like fucking crazy men out there, almost starving. They weren't exactly sure how they were going to be received by the tribe of natives. Although they reportedly scared away some of the Utes with their haggard appearance, Chief Ouray greeted them as welcome guests and supplied them with food and lodging. To their grateful astonishment, he recommended that they postpone their expedition until spring, since they were likely to encounter dangerous winter weather in the mountains. He told them that no Ute would attempt such a journey, and that to chance it would be to risk almost certain death. He offered to allow the men to stay with his tribe until the winter had passed, and promised to share all that he had that he and his people had with them. So being extremely generous. But at the same time, Breckenridge, Colorado was being descended upon by miners from all over the country, and a fear of missing out on the riches made some of the men anxious to continue on. So after a couple of weeks, this mining party decided that they wanted to try to leave. They started discussing whether or not they were going to leave. It was still the beginning of February at this point, and the snow had been relentless since their arrival, meaning that half of the party was forced to stay with their wagons and horses until spring. But 11 men were unencumbered, and so they decided to proceed on. They intended to travel first to Los Pinos Indian Agency, which was the closest outpost to the camp, and proceed onward to Breckenridge from there. Chief Ouray said that there was no change in the men's minds, and so he gave them food for their journey as well as safe directions that bypassed the mountains. Packer, however, was in favor of getting to the agency by going through the mountains. I have no idea why. He thought it was a more direct route. Why are you still listening to this guy?
I don't know why anybody would trust him. What in the white
person is wrong with these idiots?
I have no idea. To continue
to listen to this guy.
Oh, God, dude.
The intelligence level of these people.
Yeah, it's kind of boggling my bean a little bit.
Yeah. 5 of the 11 men were adamantly in favor of following Ure's directions, which would largely have them follow the Gunnison River along its banks. Packer insisted that he knew the country well and that his way was quicker. Why do you listen to this guy?
Stop.
What the hell?
Stop trusting him.
Drown him in the lake the first chance you get. I don't know how we don't get to talk about the other things on the list, but I continue to use that expression.
Yeah, no, that one I think is fine. I think we're all used to it by now.
I mean, that's the only logical thing to do in this kind of situation.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I don't know where he went. He went to go take a shit. I have no idea where he's been.
Yeah.
Let's just keep going. Let's follow the riverbank.
I guess he just left
like the Native American told us to do.
Yeah. Which one are we going to trust? The weird fucking American Rasputin or the actual person who knows the fucking land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He eventually convinced 5 men to follow him. The other guys kept going, and their journey was besieged by bad weather and freezing temperatures, and although they followed the river, provisions ran out well before they reached their destination. These men were close to starvation, but cowhands with the government cattle camp near Gunnison, Colorado, came upon them by chance and gave them food and shelter, and they remained at that camp, at the camp, until later that April. But on February 9th, Packer and his 5 others in his party left for the Los Pinos Indian Agency, intending to traverse the mountains. Besides Packer, the group comprised Shannon Wilson Bell, James Humphrey, Frank Butcher Miller, George California Noon. California. They call me California.
Nice.
Of course they do. And a guy named Israel Swan. The fact that no one in the other group opposed the departure of their guide has led many researchers to conclude that Packer's inexperience and overall attitude had become quite taxing to them. Yeah, you fucking think so?
Oh my god.
And then they figured they were better off without him. Again, first chance you get, drown this guy in the river. Who's gonna even give a shit?
Who's gonna care?
Who is gonna care? All right. The men in Packer's party had a 75-mile journey ahead of them. The leader of the combined parties, Bob McGrew, guided Packer's party along the river route advised by Chief Ouray until his horses could not continue. McGrew unloaded the men's provisions and went back to Ouray's camp. The men continued along the river for a time before Packer took his party along a path higher up in the San Juan Mountains, disregarding Chief Ouray's ominous warning. The decision was made when the men barely had enough food to cover the supposed 14 days it would take to travel the safest route. They possessed no snowshoes, they had a bare minimum of matches and no flint, and also had no heavy clothing that would combat the extreme cold. They went into the mountains with 2 rifles, 1 pistol, a couple of knives, a hatchet, minimal ammunition, and a partridge in a pear tree.
Okay.
And what happened after this is not entirely clear. But again, this is about February 9th. On April 16th of 1874, here we go. Packer emerged from the woods alone and stumbled his way across a frozen lake bed to the Los Pinos Indian Agency near Sagauche, Colorado, with rags latched to his feet. As the men of the agency sat around the table of the mess hall eating breakfast, the door was flung open, and Packer stood before them begging for food and shelter. He carried with him a rifle, a knife, a steel coffee pot, and a satchel. The men rushed him inside, set him down at the table, and gave him some food, which he vomited as quickly as he ate it.
Oh, boy.
Packer said that his digestion was altered as a result of his prolonged near starvation. But after several shots of whiskey, he related to the men the events leading up to Ouray's camp, and that he'd been hired by 5 men to guide them to Breckenridge from there. He stated that during their journey, he had become snowblind and was lagging behind the remainder of his party. And he was becoming a burden to them. He'd been a burden since the beginning.
That's true. That's entirely fair.
Then he continues his story. He claims that a member of the party named Israel Swan supplied him with a rifle and that they abandoned him. He claimed that he was forced to survive on his own and make his way out of the mountains with minimal ammunition and virtually no supplies. And they ate little else than roots and rosebuds the entire time that he was alone. The men at the agency listened to his story, but found it rather odd that even though he had been lost in the wilderness for a little over 2 months, he did not look as malnourished and threadbare as most lawn wanderers they had ever come across. His face was reported as being bloated, and his overall physique was hardly skeletal. Packer claimed he was broke and sold his Winchester rifle to Major Downer, the agency's Justice of the Peace, for $10, which is the equivalent to $230 now.
That's not bad.
It's not bad for a rifle. Packer stayed at the agency for 10 days before he expressed that he wished to go back home to Pennsylvania and then headed nearby to the town of Sagauche to buy supplies for his journey. But here it goes.
Oh, no.
Just like any criminal, he's stupid. And
yeah.
The minute he gets to civilization, he shows how stupid he actually can be. When he reached Sagauche, Packer made arrangements to room in Dolan's saloon. Larry Dolan, the owner, claimed that Packer spent about $100 there during his stay. That's equivalent to $2,287 now.
Damn, son.
That's a lot of money.
That is not a broke man.
And that Packer even offered to lend him $300? What? How's he getting all this cash? Packer also spent $78 in a general store. It was also claimed that he had several different wallets in his possession.
If you're going to murder a bunch of people and exactly. steal their money, put it all in your wallet, you fucking simpleton.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Let's see here. He started drinking heavily, and after becoming intoxicated, he started giving conflicting stories regarding his journey and how he came to be separated from the other men. This led to quick gossip among the townspeople, given his inconsistent story, seemingly endless cash flow, and the fact that his party was still unheard from.
Yeah, all those things are bad.
These guys abandoned him. They're supposed to be in the town where he is now. This is where they were headed, and they're not here.
Why wouldn't he go to a different town?
Or just get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Get what you need and take off.
Be a better criminal, you idiot.
Whatever. Preston Nutter, a member of the original party who remained at Erase Camp, arrived in Sagosh around this time with two other original party members. He encountered Packer in Dolan's saloon, drinking and carrying on. Nutter asked Packer where the rest of his party was, with Packer claiming that he had got his feet wet and frozen. He stated that they had set up a camp, and when a winter storm set in, and he started a fire to warm up while the others went ahead to look for food. Packer claimed that Swan left him with his rifle in case of trouble, and they never returned. He presumed that they had abandoned him. He claimed he was forced to leave the party to an unknown fate, and that he had no idea where they went when they left him, and lived mainly on rosebuds and the occasional squirrel as he made his trek out. Nutter thought that this story was odd, considering that Packer looked rather well-fed, and that it would be a fatal choice for five miners unfamiliar with Colorado to abandon their guide in the snowbound mountains of a territory he claimed to know well. Nutter also thought it peculiar that Israel Swan would give Packer his rifle, leaving the group of four with only one rifle as a means of shooting game. Additionally, he noted that Packer had in his possession a skinny knife that had belonged to Frank Miller. When Nutter asked Packer how he claimed he came to have it, Packer claimed that Miller had stuck it in a tree and walked off without it. Having had doubts about Packer's story from the beginning, Nutter was convinced that something nefarious had happened.
Because something nefarious had happened.
Yes, foul play. Nutter had come to view Packer in the same negative light as everyone else in the group, based upon all of his behavior leading up to the arrival at Ure's camp. Accusations were flung and words were exchanged, with Nutter threatening to hang Packer. Oh. Nutter later said regarding Packer, he was sulky, obstinate, and quarrelsome. He was a petty thief, willing to take things that did not belong to him, whether they had any value or not. The two men were separated, and Packer made plans to move on. Meanwhile, back at the Los Pinos Indian Agency, two men of the five-man party that had taken the Gunnison River route before being rescued by the government cowhands finally arrived at their destination. They were joined a few days later by the remaining three men, including Oliver D. Lausheiser, which was part of the original party. The men were introduced to the head of the agency, who greeted them and relayed to them that they had received another member of their party by the name of Alfred Packer, and that he spoke of desertion at the hands of his companions. All five men at once discredited what Packer had told the general to his staff, stating that the men that they had known would never abandon a man to die. Lausheiser flatly told the general that Packer was not to be trusted and that he was sure that something bad had happened in the mountains. He noted the Winchester rifle carried in by Packer belonged to an elderly man in Packer's party, and that a pipe he had left behind at the agency belonged to a man named Shannon Bell, who was also a member of this party. So, you know, his story's starting to unravel. The men convinced this General Adams to dispatch a mounted agency officer to Sagosh at once to retrieve Packer for questioning, but under the guise of recruiting him for a search party for the missing men, so you're going to trap him. Packer was in the process of getting his things gathered to leave the area when he was approached by Nutter and some other men. The agency officer arrived just in time and got between the men. He told Packer that he had been sent to enlist him as a guide for the search party for the missing men. Packer was reluctant to go, but with little other option than vigilante justice, he agreed. He mounted his recently purchased horse and followed the officer back to Los Pinos, but not before Nutter had a private chat with the officer. Upon arriving at the agency, Packer came face to face with General Adams and five men he had not seen since February. The agency offer, officer came in after Packer and relayed to General Adams that a man named Preston Nutter had told him Packer had spent several hundred dollars over his 6 week stay in Sagauche, as well as buying a new horse and saddle, that he was in possession of things that belonged to the missing men, and that he was penniless when he had originally joined their party. Lautheiser, demanded an explanation from Packer, who repeated the story exactly as he had told it the first time. Packer showed amazement that the men had not been heard from and was concerned for their well-being. Lautheiser scoffed at the story, demanded to know where his newly acquired wealth came from, with Packer stating that he had received a cash loan from a man in Sagauche. Adams told Packer that if this were true, then he should not mind staying at the agency while the officer was sent back to Sagauche to verify the story. Packer agreed with slight hesitation. The officer was dispatched at once and after a short while returned with news from various sources that Packer had been seen with several different wallets and had told varying stories regarding his journey. He had arrived in Sagauche with plenty of cash, and no one in town claimed to have loaned him a penny. Adams convened a council of the five miners, himself, Packer, and the agency officers to settle the matter. As they began the proceedings, two Ute tribesmen rushed into the agency holding strips of dried human flesh.
Oh, there it is.
There we go.
Fuck yeah.
They reported, they called it white man's meat.
Oh, I love it. White man's meat. Fuck, I'm so excited now.
Which they had found on a hill near the agency while hunting. Packer reportedly fainted and crumpled to the floor. He was revived and profusely began begging for mercy, and mercy, swearing to make a full confession. After a long silence, he cryptically stated to Adams, "It would not be the first time that people had been obliged to eat each other when they were hungry."
Whoa! Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I know. Packer slowly and sobbingly began to tell what was to become one of several different official statements over the next 3 decades.
Okay.
Yes. Herman Lauder, the agency clerk, was in attendance and transcribed Packer's first official statement. Packer claimed that the men had left Duray's camp while they thought with what they thought was sufficient food for the anticipated 14 journey ahead of them. Before they knew it, provisions were exhausted owing to the rough terrain and expenditure of energy needed for the traverse. They survived for days on roots dug from the ground, pine gum, rosebuds, and the occasional rabbit. After a few days of no wildlife activity due to the extreme cold and eating virtually nothing but roots, he claimed that the men started to eye each other in an unsettling way, their stomachs twisting in hunger. A few days after this, he left camp to gather dry firewood and returned to find 4 men around the slain body of Israel Swan, who had been struck in the head with a hatchet and killed instantly. The force started to butcher Swan, with Packer accepting the situation and joining them. He claimed several $1,000 was found on Swan's person and divided between the men. They consumed the most agreeable parts of Swan's body, packed some up, and moved on.
Good God!
With Packer appropriating Swan's rifle. Within 2 days, however, the 5 men were again out of meat, and game continued to elude them. Packer, Bell, Humphrey, and Noon decided in secret that Miller would be the next to go. Packer confessed that Miller was a stocky man.
God damn it.
I take offense as a stocky rude man myself. And was chosen for his amount of soft flesh.
God damn it.
Shots fired. He was killed with a hatchet blow to the head while he was stooping to pick up wood for the fire, then butchered and consumed.
Man, get him while he's down, performing a service.
Go after the fat guy.
Kill the chubby man as he's getting firewood to help keep y'all warm.
Oh, look. Miller's got a dad bod. Let's take him out next. Packer took Miller's knife, having admired it, and Miller's share of Swan's money was redistributed amongst the 4 men, who then moved on to Los Pinos. This is 2 days after they butchered the first guy.
How do you not get enough meat out of one human being to last you 2 days?
We're getting close to that.
I'm just asking you. There's no reason they had to kill the chubby dude.
We're getting close to the no-go zone again. We're not going to talk about the amount of consumable meat on a human being.
Why not?
Because it's not a thing that we should be talking about.
Okay, I'm just saying, like, 2 days seems like a bit of a jump. I feel like at that point they were doing it because they wanted to, not because they needed to.
Again, this is just his story.
Okay, okay. I'm less angry about it now.
But you're right, if you have a 200-pound man, I mean, there's got to be a lot more consumable meat on a human being than 2 days worth.
I'm just saying, I'm, what, like 210 pounds, I think?
Sure you are.
So I feel like there's enough meat on me to last more than 2 days.
Stop. We're not going to talk about it.
I'm just saying, I'm not saying I'm eating me. I'm doing the opposite. I'm trying to make up for the thing I said earlier.
Sure.
If I were to give my body Christ-like to the people that I was exploring the wilderness with, I would hope that they would get more than fucking 2 days worth out of me.
He's going to give of his body. This is my body.
Eat of my body.
Do this in remembrance of me?
Yes.
Oh my God. Can't believe you, Dylan. All right. Let's keep moving. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. All right. That's the point.
So at this point, for those of you keeping score at home, they've killed and butchered 2 men for food. The winter was relentless and the men were slow moving, barely able to see in front of them, cursing the wind that was cutting at their exposed skin. Humphrey was next to be sacrificed.
See, they're going too fast.
Just due in remembrance of me. Followed before too long by George Noon. At last, it was just down to Bell and Packer. He claimed that the 2 men swore on Almighty God not to eat each other.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. You fucking jagweed.
They each had a rifle at this point and a couple of $1,000 of Swan's cash and presumed that the 2 men would fare well enough on the remainder of the trip with what minimal game there was to be found. They agreed that they would say the 4 men had perished from the elements and were buried with dignity, vowing never to speak of the cannibalism. They felt no one would ever believe that it was necessary, and so they just decided they weren't going to talk about it. After trekking for a few days with little else eaten other than a rabbit and some roots, the men were exhausted and set up a camp next to a large lake that was skirted on one side by a large grove of hemlock trees. Packer said that a few days after this, Bell snapped up out of his blanket and screamed that he could not take it anymore. He told Packer that one of them was going to die for food. He snatched his rifle and sprinted at Packer with it ready to bash his skull in. Packer deflected the blow and struck Bell in the head with the hatchet. He claimed that at this point, the only fear he had left was to starve to death. He then butchered Bell, eating as much as he could in preparation for the remaining leg of his journey, and packed a good amount of it away.
This is some fucked up shit.
He relieved Bell of his share of Swan's money and then headed on, unsure how far he was from anywhere or whether he was even going to survive. After a while, he mounted a hill and saw at long last the Los Pinos Indian Agency. So then he threw away the remaining strips of Bell's flesh, presuming that an animal would hastily eat them, and admitted that he did so with a fair degree of hesitation. He confessed that he had grown quite fond of human flesh.
I don't like that.
And found the portion around the breasts to be especially delicious.
The way you're looking at me tells me I shouldn't comment, so I'm not going to comment.
I guess so.
Why are you looking at my titties like that? My eyes are up here, sir.
Dylan, you're so delicious.
Yeah, I know. That's what it says in my Tinder bio.
So, that's the end of his story that he's telling.
No, it doesn't.
Lautheiser, Budweiser, erupted with anger, but General Adams exerted his authority and called for a conference among the 5 men and the agency officers to determine the next course of action. It was decided that a search party would be assembled at once to find the men's remains. The 5 Utah men claimed that they did not believe one part of Packer's story, and that Bell was the sort of man that would lay down his life for another if needed. General Adams asked the 2 Ute men if they knew the area next to the lake that Packer had described. They said that such a place existed roughly 50 miles away across the hills. The search party was headed by agency clerk Herman Lauder and consisted of the 5 miners from Utah, a few agency officers, and Packer acting as a guide. Again?
Motherfucker, stop letting him guide!
Why are you keeping this guy alive? Just fucking hang him.
Fucking honestly. Fucking
he hang obviously him. Killed people. Just... fuck, why do we need him around anymore?
Yeah. Also, let's look at the whole reason you made him a guide this time was because somebody made him a guide last time. Who thinks that's a good idea?
None of these people are exercising any good judgment. All right, here we go. After 2 weeks, as the party was reaching the area of the lake fork of the Gunnison River, Packer claimed he was lost and that the area did not look right. Oh my God, of course.
You stupid bitch.
Budweiser called Packer a liar and a murderer and insisted that he be hanged then and there.
Good.
God, finally. Nothing was found and the party headed back to the agency. Along their route back, Packer attempted to murder Herman Louder with a large knife he had concealed in his clothing.
Motherfucker.
Maybe because he wanted to eat his delicious breasts.
Wanted to eat them delicious titties.
Oh my God. He was caught in the act, restrained and arrested. Why has he not been arrested before?
Yeah, why is he just hanging out with y'all?
Oh my God. How has this not been made into a movie?
Man, admit it. Okay, actually, I was looking it up. I have something to say a little bit later. Okay. But man admitted to growing fond of human meat.
Breast meat.
Human titties.
Oh, God, stop not saying it. Stop saying it. All right, stop. General Adams had been willing to believe Packer up to this point. Why? Why in the white person would you believe anything coming out of this guy's mouth? But the unprovoked attempt made on his officer's life convinced him that Packer was dangerous. He was transported to Sagauche and jailed by the sheriff outside the town itself for his own protection. During Packer's detention, he retracted what he had told the men at the agency about the events leading up to the five men losing their lives. He now claimed that the men had encountered a strong blizzard along the way through the mountains. The snow fell so heavily and persistently that they became hopelessly lost and were unable to retrace their steps back to their starting point. Provisions were already minimal when they began the trek and quickly ran out. They just as quickly ran out of matches and were forced to carry hot embers in a steel coffee pot to have a means to light fires. Days went by with no signs of game, and attempts at ice fishing proved utterly futile. After roasting and eating their shoes and attempting to survive on what scant and edible vegetation they could find, the men, claimed Packer, entered into a pact whereby if one died, his meat would serve to save the others from starvation. So he's saying that all of them decided this. Mm-hmm. After days of hiking with virtually nothing to eat, Israel Swan could go no further, and the others were dangerously fatigued. They found a pine-shaded gulch next to a lake and set up camp. A short time after this, Swan died of a combination of hunger and exposure, according to Packer. And then Packer signed his first confession this way. Old man Swan died first and was eaten by the five other persons about 10 days out of camp. 4 or 5 days afterwards, Humphrey died and was also eaten. He had about $130. I found the pocketbook and took the money. Sometime afterwards, while I was also carrying wood, the butcher was killed, as the two other men told me, accidentally, and he was also eaten. Bell shot California with Swan's gun, and I killed Bell. Shot him. I covered up the remains and took a large piece along. Then traveled 14 days into the agency. Bell wanted to kill me with his rifle, struck a tree, and broke his gun. So that was his signed confession. In Packer's later amended version of this story, the men had endured almost 20 days from Ure's camp and more than 10 days without any substantial food at all. Packer elaborated that James Humphrey also died of exposure to the extreme cold, and that George Noon was killed days later by Shannon Bell for the sole purpose of food, after there was no more substantial meat to be had from the three fallen men. Then it was just down to Bell and himself. He claimed that he and Bell had agreed that they would stand together until the end, swearing not to eat each other. Days went by, and Bell could no longer take the hunger and rushed to Packer with his rifle, intending to bludgeon him with a stock. Packer then shot Bell with his pistol, which is different from the first story that he told where he killed him with his hatchet. Packer confessed to taking the valuables of the deceased members, claiming they no longer needed them, but made no statements as to the exact items taken nor the amount of money accrued. The following August, the site of the incident was happened upon by John A. Randolph, an illustrator who worked for Harper's Weekly magazine. He discovered all five of the bodies at the foot of Slumgillion Pass, 2 miles southeast of Lake City, Colorado, in a pine-shaded gulch skirted by hemlock trees. They lay above the Lake Fork of the Gunnison River, now colloquially known as Dead Man's Gulch, which matched the description of where Packer had originally claimed that only Bell met his end. Okay, so do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
They found
all the bodies
in the same spot.
The same spot, mm-hmm. instead of spread out like what he was saying.
Every couple of days.
Because the cannibal is also a liar, surprise, surprise. Mm-hmm.
Here's the sad part. The men would have been well within hiking distance of the nearby city had they descended the Lake Fork instead of traversing up. especially in their alleged desperate situation. But Packard was the guide.
God damn it,
and was the worst guide in the world. The snow that had been covering the bodies in campsite had melted in the intervening 4 months. Randolph sketched the scene as he found it and then alerted authorities in nearby Lake City. The story was covered 2 months later in October of 1874 in the edition of Harper's Weekly and included his illustration of the site, which we have. I don't know if you want to do this now, but if you want to start pulling up photos.
Yes, give me one moment and we will get those pulled up.
Pull the lever, Kronk. Took too damn long. I'm already asleep.
Well, you better wake up.
You better wake up. Are you ready for this?
Yes, I'm ready. Let's see.
Do you have it up now?
Yes. So we have up the image of the bones in the gravesite, accompanied with a picture of Mr. Packard just kind of chilling.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. Hanging out. Okay. So remember that they had also, back in 1874, Harper's Weekly included an illustration of the site. But yes. That's what the bones look like.
So this is the bones. What is that, like 5 bodies there? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's pretty rough. And that's the illustration to make it even more rough.
Yeah. Okay, so the local coroner and law enforcement set out for the site along with about 20 volunteers and discovered the bodies of all 5 men in various states of decomposition, having been left to the elements and animals for 4 months. First responders to the site noted that it appeared that extreme violence had befallen the men and it was putrid with the smell of death.
Oh boy.
Frank Miller's head was missing entirely from the campsite. His and Israel Swan's corpses had been considerably worked upon by scavengers and were little more than scattered bones. Israel's skull had a jagged chunk missing out of it, and it was presumed that Miller's head had been carried away by an animal. The bodies of George Noon and James Humphreys were largely flayed torsos of rotting viscera attached to skeletal legs, but with intact bearded faces.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing in this illustration. Mm-hmm. It is deeply upsetting.
It is
how deeply. It's just bones with a little bit of meat, but then just fully bearded man faces. Mm-hmm. Something about that is really not doing it for me.
They had received blows to the head, the shape indicating perhaps a hatchet, and their bodies had noticeable broken bones. Shannon Bell lay with largely skeletal legs splayed and arms to his sides that were crudely cut to their bones, leading to hands that were still fully skinned. His remaining corpse was a putrid mass of viscera encased in an almost wholly flayed torso, which led to an almost still-living face. Insomniacs.
That's not great. Mm-hmm. That's not a great thing to hear.
Completely with a thick red beard and bushy hair. The lack of noticeable decay in his face suggested that he had been the last to die. The top of Bell's skull had been ripped open and his brains were laying on the ground beneath him. The 3 men, whose bodies were still intact or partly intact, had flesh and muscle excised from choice and meaty locations.
What?
No attempt had been made to consume bone marrow or any organs at all, which is unfortunate because, like, you could eat liver and pancreas and survive on those.
Who's saying the unsavory
of things animals
now?
Of animals,
Jacob.
I'm just saying. The state of the bodies immediately contradicted Packer's versions of events. Yeah, obviously, no shit.
So.
Guys, I'm only halfway through this story, so buckle the fuck up. We are
on a fucking journey right now.
They were all together in one spot, not scattered across miles, like Packard had said. Both Humphrey and Noon had large portions of remaining flesh, organs, muscle, etc., that could have been consumed long before Bell succumbed to the madness of hunger and attempted to murder Packard, as he had claimed. The men had tattered claws lashed to their rotting feet, which had replaced the shoes that they had eaten in their desperation, and moldy and tattered blankets lay beneath and beside them. A beaten path went from the resting place of the corpses to a crude shelter that was used by Packer, and there was evidence to suggest that the deaths had occurred before supplies were totally exhausted.
Damn. Didn't even wait.
Within the shelter were possessions of the men which Packer had left behind. The theory at the time was that Packer killed the men before supplies ran out to rob them of their possessions, got snowed in, and then lived in his makeshift shelter for months. For months. Walking to his slain companions and slicing meat off as needed.
No, I don't like that. Nature becomes your freezer.
Oh my God.
And you just get to eat your friends And I guess that's one way to live life.
This is gruesome.
This is grisly.
Preston Nutter accompanied the party to the site and identified the bodies as belonging to the five missing men. A rifle broken in two was found close to the bodies. Owing to the damage apparent on their remains, it is presumed that it was used to bludgeon one or more of the men. The remains were buried at the site by officials, and the search party returned to Packer's makeshift jail to confront him, only to find him missing.
Are you fucking kidding me?
That's why we're halfway through the story.
Son of a bitch!
Mm-hmm. The jail in question was a little more than a log cabin located on ranch property belonging to the Skagit County Sheriff. Months had passed with no definitive evidence of crime having been committed, no bodies discovered, and no formal charges lodged against Packer other than the attempt on Louder's life, which was not tenaciously sought for prosecution and used more as a way to keep him under custody. Skagit County authorities were reportedly not happy about taxpayer dollars being spent so exorbitantly on keeping Packer housed and under constant guard. He was allegedly passed a makeshift key for his irons and given some supplies and easily escaped. Even so, nearly the entirety of Skagit was convinced, either through rumor or rational deduction, that Packer was guilty of either robbery or murder. His life was threatened constantly by the nearby townspeople. Packer never divulged who helped him escape, how this was achieved, or why. It is presumed that his guard had been bribed by Packer himself or by someone else. The generally accepted theory at the time was that Packer had attached himself to the party under highly overstated qualifications of being a mountain guide familiar with the area in order to accompany the men to Breckenridge, and had at best led his party to miserable deaths due to gross incompetence. This was enough of a crime in and of itself as far as the local population was concerned. However, an ultimately more popular theory was that he had set out with his party of five men from Ure's camp with a premeditated plan to lead them into the wilderness where he would kill and rob them. Nutter and Budweiser made it a personal mission to discredit Packer's alleged qualifications for being a guide, let alone a mountain guide, pointed out all of his character flaws that they had come to know, and stressed his numerous different stories and inconsistencies. Local papers picked up the story, and the incident received constant coverage with highly sensational headlines. Many negative comments regarding Packer's character and highly imagined theories that grabbed both national and international attention. Regardless as to how it may have happened, nearly the entire population of Skagit, and soon nearly the entire country and beyond, found that Packer's culpability for his party's death was beyond doubt. The cannibalism aspect of his charges, although shocking, was not necessarily the foremost issue of his guilt. People at that time were well acquainted with the story of the ill-fated Donner Party, who had been resorted to cannibalism during the winter of 1846 and 1847, and were understanding to a degree of the dire need to eat in the unforgiving wilderness. Additionally, cannibalism was not then or now illegal per se in the United States.
So, okay, I found out that in Texas, consensual cannibalism is legal. As long as you don't murder the other party and they are giving permission, then you can do it. From a legal standpoint, it's perfectly fine.
You're just tying the noose around your neck.
I'm not going to do it. But for those of you who live in Texas, you have that option available to you, is what I'm saying. If any of our listeners have tried human meat, I don't think that they have, but if they have, no judgment. I would just like you to text me tell me what it tastes like. Don't I'm just kind of curious.
Don't send it through Instagram. I don't want to read those comments.
No, send it only through Instagram, please,
send
actually.
Send it to Gmail. Don't send it to me. I'm not going to read it.
It's a long shot. Nobody's eaten human flesh.
I know. No one's eaten human flesh. So cannibalism isn't necessarily illegal unless you commit murder to obtain the flesh. Even in such a case, the accused would be charged with murder, with the cannibalism itself being charged as the desecration or the abuse of a corpse, which we've seen before.
Yeah.
They got Ted Bundy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Packer would claim for the remainder of his life that he had been unjustly vilified and convicted for engaging in cannibalism rather than for cold-blooded murder, which he continued to deny ever having committed. In the end, it came down to one question: did the five men die due to incompetence or greed? So on March 11th of 1883, Packer was discovered by Jean Frenchy Cavazon in Cheyenne, Wyoming, living under the alias of John Schwartz. One of the original members of the Utah Mining Party who stayed in Ure's camp in the winter of 1874 was named John Schwartz. Cabazon was himself a member of the original party of the men who left Provo, Utah, and wisely decided to stay put in Chief Ure's camp. He later safely made it to their destination with Bob McGrew and Preston Nutter's party, so if they just stayed, they would have been fine. He encountered Packer by chance when Packer approached him looking to buy some supplies. Cabazon reported Packer to the local sheriff, who apprehended him and contacted General Adams. He was summoned to Cheyenne, where he confirmed Packer's identity and accompanied him by train to Denver for his second confession, which Packer signed on March 16th. Packer stated that his main reason for fleeing was out of fear of mob justice being extracted upon him by the population of Sagauche. Because the actual crime was committed within the confines of Hinsdale County rather than the neighboring Sagauche County, Packer was accordingly sent to Salt Lake City for detention and prosecution. Instead of claiming that the men were gradually eaten as they died until Bell killed Noon and Packer and Ben in turn killed Bell in self-defense, like the first story, Packer now claimed that Bell had killed the others after Bell had told him to go scouting for any way out of the mountains and to find some food. He had gone the better part of the day and returned later in the evening. That's his third confession.
Why would you believe anything he says at this point?
I know. Why? I mean, maybe just for entertainment purposes, you want to keep him talking?
I guess so. But in case anyone's forgotten, this is what this guy did. You could take a look at the screen right now and find the bodies, and then don't feel bad for him.
Mm-hmm. He says in his third confession, "I found the red-headed man who acted crazy in the morning sitting near the fire roasting a piece of meat which he had cut out of the leg of the German butcher. The latter's body was lying the furthest off from the fire down the stream. His skull was crushed in with a hatchet. The other three were laying near the fire. They were cut in the forehead with the hatchet. Some had two or three cuts. I came within a rod of the fire when the man saw me, got up with his hatchet towards me, and I shot him sideways through the belly. He fell on his face. The hatchet fell forwards. I grabbed it and hit him on the top of the head." That's his third confession at this point. He says in this ensuing moments of shooting Bell and going for the hatchet, Packer dropped his revolver in the deep snow and subsequently lost it. He claimed he made himself a crude shelter out of the stray logs to combat the snow and wind a ways down from the bodies. Another strong storm set in and he hunkered down for hours. He was starving and made the decision that he had to eat something or die. He continues with this confession. "I went back to the fire, covered the men up, and fetched to the camp the piece of meat that was near the fire. I made a new fire near my camp and cooked the piece of meat and ate it. I tried to get away every day but could not, so I lived off the flesh of these men the bigger part of 60 days.
Damn, son.
Adams asked Packer why he had not told him this story 9 years before, with Packer replying, "I was excited, I wanted to say something, and the story as I told it came first to my mind." It was the argument of the prosecution at this trial that the only logical reason for Packard to have attempted such a perilous journey through the mountains with such minimal food and supplies was for the sole purpose to lead the men into the wilderness to both kill them and rob them. At the time of Packard's trial, it was reported by the family of Israel Swan that he had left to go on the expedition with about $6,000 in cash and gold, which is about $137,000 in today's money. If you've got that much money, why are you even leaving? You don't need to go find more gold.
What the fuck do you need at that point? Whatever. Like, I was going to say $6,000 by itself, just by today's standards, is still a good bit of money. Like,
oh, yeah. That gets me out of a couple of jams.
I would love $6,000. Over, what was the conversion on that?
$137,000.
$137,000?
You don't need to go anywhere.
You don't need to go anywhere.
Again.
I might be able to buy a house. I don't know how much houses cost, but I could maybe do that.
The guy was about 65 years old at this time. Why is he even trying to travel? It makes no sense. None of it makes sense.
You got $135,000 at 65 years old?
He's got 135. He's 65 years old. He's got $137,000. He's got a valuable Winchester rifle with him.
You're set for life. Just stop doing things.
It makes no sense. But he's out there. The other four members may have either been complicit in his murder and later betrayed by Packer, or were murdered by him for having been witnesses. Packer was not found with any of the gold on him at the time of his arrest, and although he did have money left, it did not total in thousands. His spending had been frivolous. Remember? Bought himself all kinds of shit.
Idiot.
Nevertheless, on April 6th, the trial began in Lake City. Packer pleaded not guilty. After 7 days of testimonies and examinations, he was found guilty of the premeditated murder of Israel Swan and sentenced to death by hanging, which was scheduled for May 19, 1883. It was presumed that Swan's death had occurred on or around March the 1st. It was determined by the prosecution in court that Swan's remains showed signs of a struggle at the time of death and that the others appeared to be killed in their sleep. Among those who testified on behalf of the prosecution were Otto Mears, Larry Dolan, Oliver D. Budweiser, and Preston Nutter, who acted as the prosecution's key witness.
Nice.
Let's see here. Oh, yeah. According to a local newspaper, which received their quote from Larry Dolan, the presiding judge, one of the men said, "Stand up, you voracious man-eating son of a bitch, and receive your sentence. When you came to Hinsdale County, there were 7 Democrats, but you, yeah, at 5 of them, goddamn you. I sentence you to be hanged by the neck until you're dead, as a warning again, reducing the Democrat population of this county. Packer, you Republican cannibal.
Nice!
I would sentence you to hell, but the statutes forbid it. Will you please...
Fuck yeah.
Will you please tattoo that on my chest?
Yeah, 1,000%.
Packer, you Republican cannibal.
Packer, you Republican cannibal.
Oh.
Fucking said, we got 7 Democrats, you ate 5 of them. What the fuck are you doing, bro?
I was compelled, because I grew up in a cult, to read so much of the Holy Bible. Of the Christian's Bible.
You have read a lot of the Holy Bible.
I have read a lot of it. A lot of it's still rolling around in my mind, and I could recite it if I needed to.
As are the hymns.
As are the hymns. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound.
Okay.
But I have never read anything so wonderful.
So powerful.
Stand up, so you voracious, man-eating son of a bitch.
Fuck, that's good.
Oh, I love it. All right.
Oh, Jesus. Excellent shit.
Uh-huh.
Wordsmith.
All right. So it says here, let's see. The actual official sentencing says, Alfred Packer, the judgment of this court is that you be removed from hence to the jail of Hinsdale County and there confined until the 19th day of May, 1883. And then on said 19th day of May, 1883, you be taken from then hence by the sheriff of Hinsdale County to a place of execution prepared for this person. For this purpose, at some point within the corporate limits of town Lake of the town of Lake City, in the said county of Hinsdale, and between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. of said day, you then and there, by said sheriff, be hung by the neck until you are dead, and may God have mercy on your soul. God,
powerful shit,
that
man. That's
some powerful shit right there, baby.
Fuck yeah, dude! Hitting them with that heavy shit.
I love it. I love it. Okay. There's a second trial.
Oh!
The story continues. Packer was spared the death penalty when his lawyers discovered that the murder statutes on the books for 1874 had been repealed and replaced with a savings clause which spared him being tried for the murder on a technicality. In October of 1885, the sentence was reversed by the Colorado Supreme Court. They declared that the government could not sentence a man to death for committing a crime if it had indeed occurred before Colorado officially became a state as opposed to a territory. Of course. If there's ever going to be a person who's going to commit murder and somehow get away with it, it's going to be a white guy.
It's going to be the Republican cannibal.
This fucking Republican cannibal.
Fucking Republican cannibal. All right, enough about that.
The overturning of his murder charge and scheduled execution did not spare Packer culpability for the men's death, however. A second trial was held in Gunnison following the change of venue for his hearing that was also granted by the state Supreme Court. And he was also given a new judge standing preside. They argued that he wouldn't get a fair and unbiased trial, so they give him a second trial. He pleads not guilty. After a swift trial and even speedier verdict deliberation, on June 8th of 1886, Packer was convicted of 5 counts of voluntary manslaughter and sentenced to 40 years in prison.
Nice!
At the time, this was the longest custodial sentence in U.S. history.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Good for him.
You know, because this is before we started charging black guys for marijuana possession for 97 years and shit.
That's true.
Enough about that. There's never enough about that.
No.
At the time of his second... If this had been... Anyway, enough about that. This is before no-knock warrants.
Yeah.
When they're killing people on their couches.
Yeah, they didn't charge black people with crimes. They just hanged them for it.
This is before, you know, three white guys chased Ahmaud Arbery through a fucking subdivision and executed him.
Did you hear about the shit that just happened?
Yes.
The gun owner...
Yeah, the no-knock warrant.
Yeah, that no-knock warrant. Of course, the fucking NRA hasn't said a goddamn thing.
Fuckers. May they all rot in hell. No. Don't. May they not all rot in hell, because, you know, anyway, enough about that. Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
At the time of his second hearing, local hunters and officials made statements that although the winter of 1874 was one of the worst they had encountered for quite some time, the area of the San Juans where Packer and his party were camped was still plenty active with such large wild game as deer and antelope, as well as smaller game. There was even a report that the carcass of a deer was found near the campsite. This significantly damaged Packer's claims that the area was so scant with wildlife that the men had to resort to cannibalism quickly. Further emphasis was placed on the fact that Packer's choice to hike through the San Juan Mountains during the middle of winter, where snow depths can exceed more than 6 feet in a single downfall, coupled with blistering winds and freezing temperatures, was practically suicidal. Yeah. He had been given a safe route to follow by locals that was next to the main water source that could have yielded fresh fish, if nothing else, as well as serve to keep them on course. But he perilously chose a mountain path with minimal supplies in the naive belief that it would be a faster route. In actuality, the route Packer and his companions took was nearly identical in length to the recommended route, yet far more dangerous. Packer took the stand in his own defense. His version of the events that took place at the campsite remained relatively the same as the second official version. He made a request that he be charged the 40 years, but only for the death of Shannon Bell, who was the only man that Packer continued to claim that he had killed, with the other deaths being beyond his control. His request was denied. He was sent to serve out a sentence in Cannon City Penitentiary. Packer filed appeals on his case on 5 separate occasions. How does he even have the money to do this? And was roundly denied upon every submission. He sent letters to local newspapers stating that he had been unjustly convicted by an unfair and unsympathetic judicial system and by the ignorant conclusions and judgments of small-minded people. On June,
looking at this dude, look in this guy's fucking eyes, wherever they are on my screen in relation to my little thumbnail. Tell me that is not the face of a man who has killed and eaten 5 people. Mm-hmm. He fucking did it. He knows what he was doing. You cannot play sympathetic when you fucking look like great value Charles Manson. Okay?
Great value Charles Manson. Packer's sentence was officially upheld by the Colorado Supreme Court. Nevertheless, he was paroled on February 8th, 1901, following a campaign that was initially spearheaded by an old acquaintance of Packer's named Dwayne Hatch, who petitioned for his release nearly a decade before his labors came to the attention of Polly Pry. Remember that name. Packer had served 18 years of his 40-year sentence. An entrepreneurial and resourceful reporter for the Denver Post named Polly Pry saw and appreciated the sensationalism of Packer's case and how his story and the pre-existing reputation could generate a buzz. She used Packer's service in the Army as a basis to portray him as a common man of the people who got caught in a regrettable situation, a victim of circumstances who did what he had to survive, and a man who had essentially been crucified for violating civilized sensibilities by having to resort to cannibalism. Her stories on Packer led to a change of heart within the local businesses and people that a series of petitions and requests made their way to the office of the Colorado governor, which were still met with strong opposition. Charles Thomas was the governor at the time. He ultimately relented, and his last official act before leaving the office was to parole, but not pardon, Packer, under the agreement that he would not profit from his story. After his parole, Packer went to work as a guard at the Denver Post and later as a ranch hand. His employment at the Denver Post came about, many believe, as a direct result of Polly Pry and her employer securing his release. Packer had an endearing respect for Pry for his remaining years and referred to her as his liberator. Eventually, Alfred Packer died on April 23rd, 1907, at the age of 65 in Deer Creek, Colorado. The cause of his death was cited as dementia, trouble and worry, although his clinical cause of death had been described as a result of a stroke. Packer is today widely rumored to have become a vegetarian before his death.
God damn, are you kidding me?
And it was reported to those who knew him that he was a rich man with stories and well-liked by children. He lived modestly and was reported to be a charitable man, but come on, man. Packer was buried in Littleton, Colorado with a full military burial.
What?
His grave is marked with a veteran's tombstone listing his original regiment in 1862, which is a replacement as his original grave marker was stolen. His first name is listed as Alfred on his headstone instead of Alfred.
That's kind of funny.
But he is known to have gone by both his entire life. He was never successful in getting an official state pardon for his crimes. The Littleton Cemetery Association cemented over Packer's grave in 1973 to deter grave robbing and vandalism. Despite their belief that his corpse is intact, claims have been made by Edward Meyer, the vice president of exhibits and archives for Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum, that they are in possession of Packer's dissected skull, which they bought from an anonymous party for a reported sum of $20,000.
Damn.
No statement was made as to how they verified the authenticity of the skull, which is partially mummified, other than to state that the seller's information regarding its origin was sufficient. If the skull in question does belong to Packer, it is presumed that his head was removed from his body shortly before or after his burial, was then dissected with the brain being removed for study, was then preserved through an arsenic curing process. It is said to have fallen into the hands of a traveling sideshow, which displayed it until it was later sold to a private party, who in turn later sold it to Ripley's. As of 2008, the skull is reported to be at the Ripley's Museum in San Antonio, Texas.
You're kidding. We're going to Ripley's, Believe It or Not, Museum. Holy shit.
I just watched a video. It was an old video of David Dobrik. And his buddies were like,
that dude's a piece of shit.
The guy is a piece of shit. But here's the story. They were like, if you carry a ladder, you can get in anywhere. And they showed him like getting into like Fiesta, yeah, Texas, that's, and stuff. Like,
if you just look official.
We could go.
We could go.
And find this guy's skull.
That's true. Okay. Eventually we're going to go. And eventually we're going to take pictures of it, with it, maybe giving it a little kiss. Not on the mouth.
You're gonna skull fuck it, aren't you?
No!
Yes, you are. What is wrong with you? You dirty son of a bitch.
What is wrong with you?
You already said that you would resort to consensual cannibalism, so nothing is beneath you.
I said that is not true, and I said I would try a wee morsel.
You are no son of mine.
A wee morsel.
I'm gonna tell your mother. Your mother already knows. Mom? Do you hear the shit that comes out of his mouth?
I don't give a fuck.
You say that now.
What's she gonna do? Get mad at me for saying that I would eat people?
She's gonna be mad at you for it.
Whatever.
All right. Message me later.
Who cares?
All right. Listen.
I'm not gonna eat anybody.
Okay. On July of 1989, 115 years after Parker consumed his companions, an exhumation of the five bodies was undertaken by James E. Stars, who was a professor of law specializing in forensic science at George Washington University. Following an exhaustive search for the precise location of the remains around the area of Cannibal Plateau.
Cannibal Plateau, are you fucking kidding me?
The men's remains were located at the end of a residential driveway of a home belonging to a local surgeon and were buried only 13 inches below ground level.
Oh my God.
That's what my girlfriend said, is that she used to travel with her family through Colorado, and she always wanted to stop, and they wouldn't let her stop, and it was finally one time she was able to stop, and it's like at the end of a fucking driveway.
That is fucking crazy. I've got the sign pulled up, the massacre site sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stars,
you can see like that's just a road. Uh-huh. Like it's just right there.
So he, you know, they exhumed the bodies, but they said that he was quoted as saying, I don't think there will ever be any way to scientifically demonstrate cannibalism. Cannibalism per se is the ingestion of human flesh, so you'd have to have a picture of the guy actually eating. Packer never denied cannibalism, so this was not the men's main intent for their investigation. The evidence uncovered was sufficient for Stars to conclude that Packer had indeed murdered his comrades. Okay. Instead of them murdering each other. Stars came away with the belief that Packer more than likely murdered his companions for their belongings and resorted to cannibalism out of necessity rather than intent. The men were reinterred and given a proper burial, complete with funeral rites being read. Exhumation of the skeletal remains showed signs of what appeared to be blunt force trauma to the skulls of two of the men, with no other noteworthy disturbance of their skeletal remains aside from those made during their butchering. All skulls had damage to varying extents to their upper craniums, with fabric fibers being found within some of the skulls themselves, suggesting that their heads were possibly covered with a blanket at the time of their deaths. The three other skeletons showed defensive signs of hacking marks across their radial and ulna bones of their forearms.
Oh, shit.
Which one could sustain while shielding his face and body from attack. Although Packer claimed that Bell had murdered the others with hatchet blows to the head in his second version of the story, he never claimed that he had to fight off Bell with the hatchet in any rendition. In one version of his story, Bell had charged at Packer with Swan's rifle, and Packer shot him. In Packer's second official version of the story, he claimed he finished off Bell with a hatchet blow to his head, but that was the extent of his claim in regards to the hatchet. However, all five of the skeletons had numerous differing post-mortem injuries to them, including depressed fractures, butterfly fractures, butchering trauma, and hacking trauma, which seems to contradict Packer's claims of minimal cannibalism.
Minimal cannibalism, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Two skeletons, right. Aside from that of Shannon Bell, were found to have cylindrical puncture wounds in their pelvic bone, which has led some to question that if all three marks were the result of scavenging marks of a bear or even possibly bullet wounds, but nothing was conclusive. The discovery suggested a scenario in which two of the men were bludgeoned in their sleep by Packer. The three remaining men awoke, and Packer shot them in the hips to incapacitate them, if it was a bullet wound. Then they attempted to fight off Packer, who was wielding a hatchet, and he killed them all with blows to the head. He then butchered the men and used their flesh to survive in his snowbound state and during his journey. The differing states of decomposition of the bodies does contradict this theory, though it is plausible. It would seem unlikely that Packer had shot three of the five men in the hip, which is not by itself an outright kill shot unless it was to debilitate them while he went in for the kill. Further analysis into the entry and exit geometry would be telling us could be telling as to what their initial cause was, but no such examination had been done to date. His ultimate motivation for the murder has always been debated heavily and has several possible theories. In 94, David P. Bailey, curator of history at the Museum of Western Colorado, undertook an investigation to turn up more conclusive results than Starr's with respect to Packer's claims of having shot Bell. In the Audrey Thrakill collection of firearms owned by the museum was a Colt revolver that had been reportedly found at the site of the Packer's alleged crime. Exhaustive investigation into the pistol's background turned up documents from the time of the trial. A Civil War veteran that visited the crime scene stated that Shannon Bell had been shot twice and the other victims were killed with a hatchet. Upon careful study of Bell, he noticed a severe bullet wound to the pelvic area and that Bell's wallet had a bullet through it. This seemed to corroborate Parker's claim that Bell had killed the other victims and that Packer had shot Bell in self-defense. By 2000, Bailey had not yet proven a link between the antique pistol and Alfred Packer, but he discovered that forensic samples from the 89 exhumation had been archived in analysis in 2001 with an electron microscope found microscopic lead fragments in the soil taken from under Shannon Bell's remains that were matched by spectrographic analysis with the bullets remaining in what was indeed Packer's pistol. That's a lot of science.
It's a lot of shit.
Who's got money for this? Who's writing the grants for this bullshit?
Who the fuck is going to all this trouble?
Well, Jesus Christ. I can't believe I just said that. All right. While it appears certain that at least Bell was shot, the question of whether or not it was in self-defense remains unanswered. So there's a lot going on here. That's basically the meat and potatoes of the story, okay, if you will. But there's a little bit more to it. There's some legacy here. In 1968, yeah, students at the University of Colorado in Boulder named their new cafeteria grill the Alfred G. Packer Memorial Grill with the slogan, "Have a friend for lunch."
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm not kidding. I can't make this shit up.
That is the best slogan they could have possibly chosen. The
students were able to order an El Cannibal beef burger, and on the wall is a giant map outlining Packer's travels through Colorado.
And you're giving me shit.
They renamed this cafeteria, the Alfred Packer Restaurant and Grill, and we have a photo of that.
Yes, we do. I have it pulled up right here. Alfred Packer.
In 77, so 9 years afterwards, the Secretary of Agriculture, the United States Secretary of Agriculture, attempted to terminate a contract for the department's cafeteria food service, but was prevented by the General Services Administration. To embarrass the GSA, Berglund, who was the Secretary of Agriculture, and his employees convened a press conference on April 10th of 77 to unveil a plaque naming the executive cafeteria the Alfred Packer Memorial Grill, announcing that Packer's life exemplified the spirit and fare of the cafeteria, which would serve all mankind. The event was covered by Barbara Walters. The stratagem succeeded and the contracts were terminated soon thereafter. Magnanimous in victory, Bergman yielded to the bureaucratic objection that the plaque lacked official GSA organization and authorization and removed it. The plaque is currently displayed on a wall of the National Press Club. It doubles as a memorial to Stanley Weston, a man who worked at the USDA. The press club's hamburger is called the Alfred Packer Burger.
God damn it.
Mm-hmm. The annual Philadelphia Folk Festival features a dining tent emblazoned with the tongue-in-cheek moniker, the Alfred E. Packer Memorial Dining Hall, serving humanity since 1874. There's also a Packer Saloon and Cannibal Grill in Lake City, Colorado. And that is the story, my friends, of Alfred Packer, the Colorado Cannibal.
That is fucking great.
Man, crazy.
Wow. Colorado cannibal consumes companions. Al Packer cannibal. I love that.
And it was just...
That is truly delightful.
It's a lot going on there.
That's so very good. I love a good cannibal story. Not for the reasons that I know you're going to accuse me of. You're but so gross. Just saying. I love it.
All right.
Excellent shit, man.
I know. That's all I got, buddy. I'm spent.
Very good. Yeah, no, it's very late. It is 11:30 at night. It is so many hours past his bedtime.
And way past my bedtime.
And we're approaching mine, so.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Excellent. Thank you for a good topic.
Of course, absolutely. Thought I'd bring the heat and bring the thunder.
Brought that heat. Brought that thunder. Hail Satan.
Again.
Y'all know how it goes.
A listener submitted topic. So if you've got one that you like, bring it on.
Send it to us.
All right.
Which reminds me, before we close out, I'm sure you probably saw, but we got an email a little while ago from somebody that I thought was a listener. I opened it up, and our email is
too scared podcast@gmail.com.
So the email we got was just too scared podcast! That was the whole email, and I was like, why not? So I responded with too scared podcast! And then it ended up being like a scam, like found your email on a dating site, cutie kind of shit. So I was pretty bummed about that, but I thought somebody was just excited to email us.
Should have followed that link.
Not going to follow that link.
No, too bad.
Yeah. You can follow it on your computer that you can afford to replace.
No, thanks.
Yeah. Not messing with those viruses.
No.
Well, anyway. That's it. That's all for me. Thank you, guys. Oh, don't forget to submit listener stories if you got them. Submit pet pictures for petty crimes, which we're going to start, I'm guessing, next week.
Send us your pictures. There's only so many photos of Boomer I can post.
That doesn't mean he won't post them all.
That's not true. I probably have, since last week, 10 more photos of Boomer.
Yeah, it's nonstop, but it's great. We love Boomer. Anyway, we're going to be doing that, so send us your stuff. Be sure to leave a review if you like us, too. We always forget to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's it for me. Thank you guys for coming.
All right, guys. We love you so much. Thank you so much for everything. From Dylan, my co-host, my name is Jake, and we hope we've left you too scared to sleep.